the Patriots, where do I start? Probably back Sunday night against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, against Tom Brady, the return, all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, that game was it was crazy. The environment was insane. Just the New England weather, it raining, just an playoff game feels in week four of the regular season. And yeah, like it was, you had the initial love and appreciation for Tom Brady, but as soon as he stepped out onto the field with the other 10 guys in that huddle, it was game time. It was showtime. It was these fans, these New England Patriots fans, were turning their attention back to their team, rooting for them to win this football game. And leading up to that game during the week, obviously the huge discussion was, and it was kind of annoying in a way, was about Brady and Belichick. Obviously the two of the greatest in their respective positions. Brady at quarterback, of course, Belichick at the head coaching position, and just defensive minds in general. The thing that was making me upset is that you're seeing all these graphics, these videos, everything being posted on social media, and very little had to deal with Mac Jones or had to do with Mac Jones. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, this is a perfect opportunity. I know it was only his fourth game of his pro football career, but this was the perfect opportunity for Mac Jones to prove a point, prove that he is the future, and showing that in front of the past in Tom Brady, and outperformed him. If you're just looking at a pure stat line perspective, six more passing yards, completion percentage. Brady was what, like just above 50%, or actually, was he below 50%? Might have been below 50%. But anyway, and then Mac Jones, yeah, passes for over 75% completion percentage, two touchdowns, had the one interception there, which kind of threw it into coverage there, and it ended up being a tip ball, jump ball situation. But just the comfort level to be able to run these gadget plays, these trick plays that we were used to with the Tom Brady offense and what Josh McDaniel was able to put together. That was back again with Mac Jones and Jacoby Myers having two clutch passes. Actually had the highest passer rating, highest QBR of any of the three who threw passes, but granted, small sample size. But still, like, you're in the situation to where it's what, 16-14 in the end zone with the premium on field, away from the tunnel, away from the opening, away from the lighthouse, whatever. And you have that Jacoby Myers pass go to Nelson Agholor, gets him to like inside the 10-yard line, and it's just a shame that they couldn't have punched that in, because that really would have been not necessarily a buzzkill, because you still have Brady being able to drive and stuff. Like, who knows? They could have just scored a touchdown right there. But they just settled for the field goal, and that ended up being enough. That would have been huge in that game. Probably would have gotten New England a victory there. But that's kind of the whole game of inches logic, and it showed up when you have thankfully the offense was able to drive, get into field goal range to even set up Nick Folk for an opportunity. You know, even if Folk made that, who knows if Brady would have drove down the field, or the offense would have drove down the field and ended up winning. It would have been, what, 22-20. Who knows if that would have happened. Like, I mean, you just had Aaron Rodgers do that against San Francisco in week three. So you could have seen that happen. But anyway, to be able to set that up, and Folk definitely has the leg. He's kicking probably, he's having the best stretch in his career, remarkably, I think. not exactly sure, but to where he had made 35, 36 consecutive kicks, set the franchise record. So more consecutive kicks than Adam Vinatieri, Steven Gostkowski. So that's pretty remarkable. And yeah, he just, you know, had the leg. It would have been good if it was on, and then it just, you know, drifted to the left, hit the post. That was the worst thing, because where we were sitting, like our seats, that was the nearest goalpost to us. So you see that ball flying through the air, and it just hits the post, and then it's a dud on the ground, and it's just like, you don't really know how to react, just stunned. But there's credit to this team, I guess, because I think there was, I mean, you obviously defending Super Bowl champions, Tom Brady, you're going to have your doubts. But they, you know, first of all, covered, because I think Tampa Bay was a 7-point favorite or whatever. So they do that. And then, yeah, just literally a football or two lengths away from potentially winning this game. But yeah, just in general, the game was crazy. The atmosphere was unbelievable. And I just, if we're forecasting the Patriots' future here, you know, they have Houston this week, which, given recency bias and just the week four matchups, Houston losing to Buffalo 40-0. You have Davis Mills in there, the rookie out of Stanford. By no means do I think he's going to have a game next week or this week now in week five to where he only passes for 87 yards and has four interceptions. I don't think it's going to be that bad, but hopefully the Patriots can force him into the situation to where it's super run first. And if they're able to stop that with the plethora of running backs they have, and David Johnson, Mark Ingram, who else is there? Philip Lindsay, Rex Burkhead, I think is still on the team. So if they're able to stop that running attack and kind of make things super one dimensional with Davis Mills having to pass the ball, granted Houston has some decent receivers. Like, you have Brandon Cooks in there, Darren Fells, the tight end. So, and the ability for the running backs to catch passes out of the backfield if Davis is getting pressured or in trouble there. There's still threats in the offense, but I think Davis Mills at quarterback makes that offense not as dynamic as they would with the quarterback, say, like Tyrod Taylor. Obviously, Deshaun Watson's a non-factor at this point. They're probably just looking to get him traded before the trade deadline that I believe is in like 4 weeks. So, yeah, I think having Davis Mills in there is a benefit. You would hope Mac Jones continues what he did on Sunday night, brings that into the next game. The thing that just shocked me, and I think it shocked a lot of people, is that when you have it's rare you're going to have success in the game when your team rushes for -1 yards. So a loss in rushing, and then you compare that to Tampa Bay's rushing offense that had 119 yards. Heck, Tom Brady had more rushing yards than the New England Patriots, 3 versus -1. So that needs to get going. A big thing, or a thing I really want to see, is Ramondre Stevenson, the fourth round pick out of Oklahoma in this year's draft. Had a pretty impressive preseason, including he had a breakout for a 91-yard touchdown against Washington in the first preseason game there. And he was probably going to have an impact early on this season, but when you're a rookie, you're on a shorter leash. And first pass he caught against Miami in week one, he goes and he fumbles it. Miami obviously recovers, and then he gets put in the doghouse. I can't remember if he was even played in week two, but I know for sure he was inactive week three and week four. You would think, okay, maybe his involvement is there. Maybe he becomes active due to James White being out. But no, that was more of Brandon Bolden, J.J. Taylor. Now J.J. Taylor's probably in the doghouse too because he fumbled when New England was in Tampa Bay's territory looking to add more points onto the board at 7-6, I believe the score was. So, you know, right now the only two backs that are kind of in the clear, I mean, I guess you could say that, Damian Harris and Brandon Bolden, even though Damian Harris had four carries for -4 yards, so not ideal at all. But yeah, I think at this point, you just got to push Stevenson's back in there, especially with the Houston Texans team that is kind of struggling, especially without Tyrod Taylor as their quarterback right now. I think he's a couple weeks away from returning at this point with his hamstring injury. So I think it would be a perfect time to get Stevenson back in there, have that type of redemption there, especially if you have Damian Harris, who started off strong. Obviously, he had the costly fumble at the end of that game against Miami in week 1, but he has been effective. It's just that these last 2 weeks, they kind of gone away from the run. I mean, you only ran the ball 8 times. So that's not ideal, but they had it going in the passing game, and you got your touchdowns to your two tight ends that you signed in free agency in Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry. So that was good to see. Jacoby Myers could be potentially the new wide receiver one. It looks like he's on track, especially after that game against Tampa Bay, where you have 12 targets, 8 catches, and 70 yards. So yeah, it seems like the offense is going to start to click. N'Keal Harry's back too, so that's good. So, you know, that's, and I, like I said, I think having to play Houston in week 5 is a perfect opportunity for them to bounce back. Now, this is kind of a redemption game. I know the situation was much different this year compared to last year, especially at the quarterback position. But Houston did beat New England 27-20 last year. I think they play in like mid-November, just before Thanksgiving, actually. So, I think New England wants to go back to Houston and redeem that loss that they suffered last year, get the W, and move on to where they would be playing Dallas at home week 6. I think Mac Jones is on track. They have him doing all the right things, especially starting off early in his career. Things seem to be heading in the right direction. Now they are 1-3. The turnaround has to be a little bit quicker here. I know there's one additional game to the season now, but things got to start, you know, picking up a little bit. But signs are pointing in the right direction. Before I get to the eventful Patriots stuff that happened today, I think I should just quickly reflect on just like Tom Brady being back in Gillette, and just like, yeah, it was not saying it was like a weird feeling, but it was definitely interesting to have him, you know, walking out of the visitors' tunnel, because where we sit, we're right above kind of, yeah, the entrance, right above the tunnel there. And it's weird to, see him. He finishes up the interview and he walks in and then, you know, waves his goodbye. And, you know, that's the last time, likely until he retires, that he's going to be playing in Gillette Stadium. Because I think the way it would work out, let's see, in 4 years, New England would be going back to Tampa Bay. Obviously, with the 17th game added, I'm not sure how that would exactly play out. It would be a small chance that they would play Tampa Bay before then. I wouldn't put it past Brady that he would play until, 52, but I doubt it. It was just like, it's just crazy. I don't know how else to really describe it. I mean, you have a player that has provided, you know, obviously a ton of great memories, great times, enjoyment, happiness, all that stuff. And no doubt it was fun to root against him and root for, obviously, your team. You got to stick with your team, kind of the same deal, the same mentality of player or former players like Teddy Bruschi and Julian Edelman, stuff like that, to where, you know, you're forever a Patriot, forever with Foxborough, forever New England, all the slogans that you can say. But yeah, like this game is, you know, something that I'm never going to forget. It was like super special. Just, I mean, you can't, I don't think anybody is ever going to get like this type of game, especially in the regular season, to where you have a guy who's once, you know, it's obviously been said so much, but winning 6 Super Bowls, playing 20 years for a team, and then coming back with a different team. And it was just, like I said, crazy. You know, it's kind of tough to describe. Like, I hate to say like, oh, you had to be there, but it was a dream to be there. I'll put it that way. So moving away from that and talking about kind of an unexpected thing, though, I mean, I guess I wouldn't be surprised as most fans would be, but Stephon Gilmore, who was the cornerback for the New England Patriots, I think he's made the Pro Bowl 3 seasons in a row now, Defensive Player of the Year in 2019. Initially reported that he gets released this morning, Wednesday morning, but there was still time for a trade to happen. I believe the deadline for that before he hit the, say, free agent market was 4 p.m. And less than an hour ago, the Carolina Panthers make a trade for Stephon Gilmore. I believe New England receives a 2023 sixth-round pick, which, you know, I guess is better than him just getting flat-out released. But you just don't necessarily know how things work or what's the mentality of the front office when you're only getting a sixth for Stephon Gilmore, when you just had Jakeem Grant, wide receiver formerly of the Dolphins, now got traded to the Bears for like a sixth round pick. So obviously Jakeem Grant and Stephon Gilmore, Stephon Gilmore's the much more highly rated player there, but yet the value was the same in those trades. So but I think the biggest thing was the two sides couldn't really come to a deal in getting an extension or getting a new contract in. I know New England was trying to get the deal done, but that there was just a ton of uncertainty with the quad injury that Gilmore was recovering from that has had him on the IR. He hasn't played this season yet. He was expected to, I think the earliest he could have came back was week 7, versus the New York Jets. So that could still be the timetable for Carolina to get him back. But yeah, so he's gone now, and that frees up, I want to say it was like roughly $6 to $7 million in cap space, which is needed, considering I think the cap number for New England was only like $1 million. So yeah, much needed cap space, especially because, and this is no surprise, that when they officially traded Gilmore, they immediately signed Jamie Collins, who was released by the Detroit Lions. Now, this is going to be Collins' third stint with the New England Patriots. He went to get his money after the first stint with New England. He got his money with Cleveland, went back to New England, I believe, and then got his money again with Detroit. And it's kind of funny because I can't remember the exact number, but I think he got paid $20 million for playing 16 games or $16 million for playing 20 games. Needless to say, he got paid a ton of money, didn't play a lot for Detroit, and Detroit is responsible for paying him, I think, the rest of his money, the way his contract's set up. So Anyway, the money that they saved when they traded Gilmore, they're using that for Jamie Collins, and that just bolsters up the linebacker core, kind of takes the pressure off Kyle Van Noy a little bit because he's not necessarily what he was, say, two seasons ago, when that defense was just absolutely dominant, especially in those first eight games of that season. So it takes a little bit of pressure off Van Noy. Obviously, you had actually the only guy to get a sack on Tom Brady on Sunday was Matt Judon. So you have Judon there. You have Hightower, Jamie Collins, Kyle Van Noy. You can add Chase Winovich in there too. Who else? Juwan Bentley. So guys like that. I mean, they have a super good core in the middle there. Then, I mean, if we're looking at, like, how's the secondary going to fare, I mean, they've fared pretty well, even without Gilmore. Obviously, it would have been a big help because you just have another guy there, and a quality guy to help out in the secondary. But it looks like you're going to be transitioning your priority. Your number one corner now is J.C. Jackson. J.C. Jackson was second in the NFL in interceptions behind Xavier Howard last season. Now he's making an impact, you know, did fairly well against Mike Evans, who's a huge target for Tom Brady to throw to, can just like put it up to a spot that nobody else can reach. And Mike Evans gets it. But Jackson played pretty well against Mike Evans, considering, 7 for 75 with 12 targets. So it was all right. I think for most of the time, Jackson was, I know they shifted it up a little bit from what I saw, but primarily Jackson was the main guy on Mike Evans. So I mean, Gilmore would have helped, but you're also improving your defense in a different way when you're bringing in a guy like Jamie Collins. So one loss in one aspect, but a gain in another. So we'll see what happens there. We'll see how the pass rush improves, because I think a lot of people were expecting, you know, maybe a couple more turnovers from Brady, but he played a smart football game. Ideally more sacks would have been cool too, but, Judon gets the one, and then that was really about it. So, maybe there'll be more success with the pass rush with the addition of Jamie Collins. We'll just have to see.